Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're continuing our reading from the sixth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 16, which is entitled A Description of Jambudvip. And I believe today we're on text 9. Is that a fact, Nikon Mahaprabhu? Yeah. Okay, we're still in the prose section, so I'll just read the Sanskrit and translation. Evang dakshine nelavritam nishado hemakuto himalaya iti prag ayata yata nilarayo yuta yojano tsedha hari varsha kim purusha varata nam yata sankhyam. Srila Prabhupada's translation. Similarly, south of Ilavrata Varsha and extending from east to west are three great mountains named from north to south Nishada, Hemakuta, and Himalaya, or Himalaya. Each of them is 10,000 yojanas, 80,000 miles high. They mark the boundaries of the three varshas named Harivarsha, Kimpurusha Varsha, and Bharata Varsha, India. Interesting that it says India here, because generally speaking, we have been informed that in previous ages, Bharata Varsha meant the entire planet. Anyway, Harivarsha obviously refers to Lord Hari. Kimpurusha. Kim means what? And Purusha is man. So, Kim Purusha is generally translated as, is this a man? In other words, this is a form that looks human-like, but they're not sure. So, Kim Purusha, is this a man? Not so sure. Okay, no purport for that verse, so we'll go on to the next one. Tatayave lavritam aparena purvena cha malayavad Gandamadhanav Anila Nishadayato Dvi Sahasram Paprahatu Ketumala Badrashvayo Shimanam Vidadhate. Srila Prabhupada's translation. In the same way, west and east of Ilavrata Varsha are two great mountains named Malayavan and Gandamadhana, respectively. These two mountains, which are 2,000 yojanas, 16,000 miles high, extend as far as Nila Mountain in the north and Nishada in the south. They indicate the borders of Ilavrata Varsha and also the Varshas known as Ketumala and Bhadrashva. Srila Prabhupada's purport. There are so many mountains even on this planet, Earth. We do not think that the measurements of all of them have actually been calculated. While passing over the mountainous region from Mexico to Caracas, which is in Venezuela, we actually saw so many mountains that we doubt whether their height, length, and breadth have been properly measured. Therefore, as indicated in Srimad Bhagavatam by Shukadeva Goswami, we should not try to comprehend the greater mountainous areas of the universe merely by our calculations. Shukadeva Goswami has already stated that such calculations would be very difficult even if one had a duration of life like that of Brahma. We should simply be satisfied with the statements of authorities like Shukadeva Goswami and appreciate how the entire cosmic manifestation has been made possible by the external energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The measurements given herein, such as 10,000 yojanas or 100,000 yojanas, should be considered correct because they have been given by Shukadeva Goswami. Our experimental knowledge can neither verify nor disprove the statements of Srimad Bhagavatam. We should simply hear these statements from the authorities. If we can appreciate the extensive energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that will benefit us. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Parishtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swamini Tinamine Namaste Saraswate Devi Gauravani Pacharini Nirvashesha Shunivadi Paschachade Sharani Om Agyana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Jaina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtang Shtapitang Jaina Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutapada Kamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha. Shri Rupam Sagarjatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tangsajivam. Chadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam. Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakanvitamscha. Hey Krishna Karana Sindhu Dina Bando Jagatate. Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namosate. Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshri. Vrishavanu Sute Devi Pranamami Haripre. Vancha Kopaturubhyascha Kripa Sindhuvya Evacha Patitanang Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasati Gaura Bhaktivrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So these statements that Prabhupada have made in today's purport, although they may seem very simple on the surface, are extremely important for us to meditate on. Because this section of the Srimad Bhagavatam directly and consistently and constantly challenges the cosmology that we've been taught in Western science. And it has very, very deep, it resonates very deeply with the degree of faith that we have in this path that we're supposedly following. I joined in New York in 73, and at that time we still had ISKCON Press. So we had completed up to the third canto. By the time we moved the operation here and renamed it Bhaktivedanta Book Trust in 75, we had the fifth canto, and Prabhupada had already translated the sixth canto, and he was pushing us to get it out. Now, in the ensuing year, after the sixth canto came out, a lot of devotees were so challenged, and a lot of devotees who had been around for a while even, were so challenged by the statements of the sixth canto that they actually left. They blooped. They couldn't reconcile the universal viewpoint that they've been taught in school with what was being presented in the sixth canto. So that challenge remains today. We have to really, really look into our hearts and our minds and decide, are we going to accept what's stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam and which has been coming down in the cyclic succession handed to us by Srila Prabhupada, or are we going to listen to, you know, some of the modern day scholars who say it's all not true? That's why Prabhupada is stating directly here, don't even think about it. Whatever measurements are given here, you accept them. 10,000 yojanas, 100,000 yojanas. Don't even think about it. Just accept it. You don't have any way to disprove it or prove it. Just accept it. If we can't do that, then we're going to find ourselves extremely challenged. Not only by this segment, but by things that Prabhupada says, just like we heard Prabhupada's lecture yesterday. Prabhupada made some heavy statements there that are very difficult to accept if you're not sold out 100% to this system of descending knowledge. This is not a system of figuring it out. It's a system of descending knowledge. Whatever comes down in parampara, you accept. So for instance, yesterday Prabhupada said that there are birds, eagles, known as Garuda, that just like on this planet we have little birds that fly from tree to tree, these birds fly from planet to planet. And while they're flying, they lay eggs. And those eggs, while they're soaring through space, they hatch into new eagles. And these eagles are so big, these Garuda birds, they eat elephants. Now do we believe that? Is there anybody here that doesn't believe it? Either way, you're going to be challenged. If you say you believe it, then the so-called scientists of the day were going to see just what we said. These people just accept mythology. Obviously, this is a mythological statement. So why should we listen to anything else they have to say? And our viewpoint is you don't even know who you are. You're thinking you're a black man or a white woman or a yellow this. You're none of that. You have nothing to do with this material body. Which is so easy, even a child can understand that. Point to your head, what's that? Your head, what is this? Your arms, what is that? Your legs? Now point to yourself, and they go like that. You say, no, that's your body. So even a child can begin to understand, yeah, I'm not this body. I have nothing to do with this body. But big, big scientists, Prabhupada over and over hammered this point. Big, big professors, he was particularly pointing at Professor Katovsky that he met in Moscow. Big, big professors of Indology, they don't know that they're not this body. They're thinking, I'm this body. I'm Russian. No, you're not Russian. This life, you may be a Russian male. Who knows what you were in the previous life? You may have been a Russian aunt. You know, and in the next life, what are you going to be? You don't know. That's one of the points Prabhupada was hammering yesterday. That you don't know. They're so foolish, these so-called scientists. They don't accept that there's a next life. They don't want to accept. And this is the demoniac viewpoint. They don't want to accept that there is a next life because that means they can do whatever they damn well please. But no, we see, doing whatever you damn well pleases, it ticks off even another regular human being. What to speak of the supreme being? Right? You may be doing whatever you damn well please. You step on my toe, I'm going to punch you. So similarly, you go around doing whatever you damn well please, and you're killing so many animals, you're going to get punched. You're going to get killed yourself. Common sense. But they're so foolish, they're thinking, no, there is no human being. No, there's no God. We can do whatever we want. So this is in the 16th chapter pointed out. Pravritimcha, nivritimcha. Jana, navidur asura. The asuras, they don't know what to do and what not to do. They're thinking they can do whatever they want to do. This is an asuric mentality. So we, as aspiring Vaishnavas, have to guard against this mentality. We should not go around thinking that I can do whatever I want or not do whatever I don't want to do. No. Everything is outlined. Do this, don't do that. Very clear. Yama niyama. This is the beginning of the yoga system. Do this, don't do that. If we can't accept even those first two steps on the yoga ladder, then we're not going to get very far. And we have to accept what is coming down in the cyclic succession. Here, Prabhupada is making that statement. He said, I don't even think they know what's going on this planet. He's talking about flying from Mexico to Caracas. So in that region, anybody who knows our geography, there are some really far out mountains in that area of the earth, going from Mexico to Caracas, Venezuela. There's one waterfall there, I forget the name of it. It's like humongous waterfall. Yeah. So there's some really far out geographical features in that segment of the earth. And, you know, they don't know. Recently, I mean, it gets to be actually a big fight because every country that has big waterfall, they want theirs to be the biggest. And, you know, the scientists are saying, no, you know, Victoria Falls is bigger than Niagara Falls, is bigger than that falls. They don't know for sure. They don't know for sure. They're guessing. So Prabhupada is pointing that out, that they're guessing anyway. So why should we listen to them? And at the end of the day, they don't even know who they are. So anybody who does not know who they are, they're mad people. Like I said, I grew up in New York City, and you ride the subway sometimes, and you see a lot of crazy people talking to themselves, and, no, leave me alone, no. They're obviously, now, would you go to a person like that and ask them for any kind of advice? They're obviously nuts. So similarly, these so-called scientists that we have today, they're literally crazy because they don't know who they are. So they're, whatever knowledge they're supposedly giving to us, it's not, you cannot hang your head on it. You can't take it as fact. They keep changing their stories anyway. When I was a child learning science 50-some-odd years ago, the prevailing viewpoint was still that there was no life at the bottom of the ocean. Nothing could survive there because of the pressure and the lack of light. Nothing could survive there. Are they right? No, totally wrong. Now they've completely changed that. Now they teach you that in these deep ocean trenches, because there's all of this heat from the core of the earth bubbling up, some or other, some living entities survive down there. With no sunlight and extreme atmospheric pressure down there, it's so pressurized. But still, living entities survive. We're not surprised because the Bhagavad Gita inform us that living entities survive everywhere. Sarvagata, living entities are existing all over the universe, in every nook and cranny. There is no place that there are no living entities. There is no place where living entities are not existing. The super soul is there, the living entity is there in every nook and cranny of the universe. So these scientists, they don't know who they are. The knowledge that they're given is speculative. We cannot follow them, but still we're affected by it and we have to admit it. When Prabhupada says maybe they didn't go to the moon, we stop to think, well, you know, so many of these scientists accept that they went to the moon. How can we go around saying that we're affected. We have to admit it. We have to admit it. When the Bhagavatam teaches us that there are birds that are so large, they can fly from planet to planet and eat elephants, we feel a little bit challenged in that. How can I go to some scientists and tell them that? But they tell us that there were flying dinosaurs that were 50-foot wingspan and they could eat other big animals. We accept that. Even though there's no real evidence for that. They dig up some bones and they show you and they say, yeah, this is the fossil of some pterodactyl that used to fly high in the sky and was so big it could eat other big dinosaurs. That we accept. But when the Bhagavatam says there's a bird that's so big it flies from planet, no, we feel challenged by that. So this segment of the Bhagavatam is very, very important for us to pay strict attention to our consciousness while we're reading it. Because if we don't surrender to this process of descending knowledge wholeheartedly, then we're going to feel very challenged. And at best, we'll feel that we can't discuss this segment of the Bhagavatam. And at worst, it'll make us leave. Quite a few of my God brothers left. Because they were challenged by these statements. Not only these statements, so many other statements. The famous one that happened right here in New Dwarka, in the 10th canto, it stated that King Ugrasena had 40 quadrillion bodyguards. Anybody here want to challenge that? Some devotees did. They actually went to Prabhupada and said, how is that possible, Prabhupada? You know, there are like 6 billion people on the planet and the planet seems crowded. How could one king have 40 quadrillion bodyguards? Just as bodyguards. What about the citizens and the rest of the government? So they were challenged by that and they went to Prabhupada and challenged him. And Prabhupada told him, whatever is there is correct. And they said, and then they made a statement that was very, very offensive. This one particular individual. He said, where would they pass stool? That was offensive to Prabhupada and that person fell down. So we're going to be challenged by the statements of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And we have to be ready. If you don't fix your mind that what's coming from Srila Prabhupada and the predecessor Acharyas is correct, you're going to be challenged. You're going to even go away. But look at the difference of the quality of the authorities that people accept. You know, people accept this Richard Hawkins as being a scientific authority, and they would quote challenge us based on his statements, which are all speculative about the nature of the universe, Big Bang, and this kind of stuff. Compare him to Srila Prabhupada. There's no comparison. Who do you trust? Who would you believe on any point? Srila Prabhupada or Richard Hawkins? There's another famous scientist, Michael Dennett. He's one of the champions of the reductionist school, that everything can be reduced to the simple material origin. And when people said, well, so many people believe in the soul, he said, there is no soul. You believe there's a little man in the brain. There is no little man in the brain. You are this body, bag of chemicals. So if we are these bodies, these bags of chemicals, why do we cry when somebody dies? First of all, why are we so inexpert that we can't fix the little bag of chemicals when something goes wrong? Right? Your car goes wrong, there's somebody out there who knows how to fix it. Something goes wrong with, you know, anything mechanical. Ratna, I'm always surprised and blown away by Ratna Bhushan. Anything that goes wrong in his community can fix, whether it's an air conditioner or the steamer in the kitchen or whatever. Yet these so-called scientists are so inexpert that this bag of chemicals, obvious bag of chemicals, so much nitrogen, oxygen, hydrogen, something goes wrong, they can't fix it. Oh, he's dead, we can't do anything. Why? If you're so sure it's just a bag of chemicals, get the right chemical, proper to say all the time. Just inject the right chemical and get the thing going again. But they can't do it. They can't save themselves. They cannot save themselves. And that we're listening to these rascals telling us about this and that and, you know, life starting from matter. No, we don't accept any of that. We really have to kick out our predisposition to hearing from these materialistic scientists. We have to. If you don't kick it out by the end of the sixth canto, then you're in trouble. Because again, there are going to be further heavy statements later on in the Bhagavatam, like 40 quadrillion bodyguards. And if you don't accept the statements of the sixth canto, if you don't accept the assertive statements of Srila Prabhupada and other predecessor Acharyas, then you're going to be challenged. You're going to be in trouble. So, here it's being mentioned again about the Vedic cosmology. Some of it we can see, because some of it pertains directly to this earth planet that we're on, and a lot of it we can't see. A lot of it we can't see. But the example that we use is that oxygen is vital to the maintenance of this body. You can't see it. Anybody ever seen an oxygen molecule floating by? No. But we don't question it. They say your body requires oxygen. It's a gas that you can't see, and we just accept it. So there are so many features of the universe that we cannot see. That doesn't mean that it does not exist. That's another thing we need to kick out solidly. Just because you can't see something doesn't mean it does not exist. It doesn't mean that it's not vital to your existence. So We have to get rid of all this so-called scientific, pseudo-scientific baggage that we're carrying around in our hearts and minds that prevent us from wholeheartedly accepting the statements of the Bhagavatam. As Prabhupada says in today's purport, you cannot prove it, you can't disprove it, just accept it. So, any questions on any of these points? I just wanted to leave a few minutes to talk about what's on the calendar today. Seriously, this is the point. This is the time. If you have some doubts about today's statements or anything else you've read in the Bhagavatam, get it out. Put it on the floor. Let's discuss it. That's what class is meant for. Yes, Prem Sankirtan Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. In purport, Srila Prabhupada said that we cannot measure, scientists cannot measure height of mountains from, if you're going from Mexico to Venezuela. But some, for example, college student can challenge this statement. You know, we can measure how is high this room here. How is high, whatever, or long, 20 meters or whatever. So scientists said that Mount Everest is high 8,800 and something meters. So did you say then it's not possible for them by modern technology, electronic technology, to measure out how is it's true, then Mount Everest is high 8,000.
Prabhupada did not say that they cannot measure. He said that there are so many mountains even on this planet Earth. We do not think that the measurements of all of them have actually been calculated. He didn't say that none of them have been calculated or they cannot calculate. He said we do not think that they have all been calculated. In other words, there's so many features of this one little Earth planet that we're living on that we're not sure about, that we don't know, and that they admit themselves. You know, they call the oceans inner space, because for them it's like, it might as well be outer space. There's so much that they don't know about it. So similarly, Prabhupada is saying that there are many mountains on this planet that may not have been properly measured or measured at all. What to speak of then, mountains that are being described off this planet, on the Bhumandala plane, which extends all the way to the edges of the universe. So, if we cannot accurately measure, or even some of things, features we have not yet measured on this planet, how can we challenge the statements of the Bhagavatam regarding features of the universe that we have no access to? That's Prabhupada's point. He's not saying that they don't have any means of measuring at all. But, above and beyond that, again, why are we so eager to accept that their measurements are correct? They make really, really horrible mistakes. On one space flight, one of the space shuttle missions, one of the experiments was completely off because instead of measuring something, the measurements had been given to design this thing in centimeters, and somebody did it in inches instead. Obviously, things aren't going to fit together. So, because they're human beings, conditioned souls, they make mistakes. We have to accept that we make mistakes. They make mistakes. A planet full of people making mistakes, and yet we think that we're so knowledgeable, we're so advanced. This is the point, that those who are above the level of mistakes, they're pointing out to us that you make mistakes, you're all making mistakes. Why are you so sure? What are you basing your surety on? Why are you so sure of these facts, so-called facts? Huh? That's the challenge from the devotee camp. That you're so sure of your statements, you know, you're poo-pooing our statements. Oh, you guys are just believing mythology. We believe in science. But where's that science? Ultimately, again, their science is based on, you know, Big Bang theory. Nobody witnessed it. There's really no evidence for it. They take it on faith. And I pointed that out once I went to a talk at USC. It was a round table of different people representing different faiths. So I was representing Krishna consciousness. And there was one atheist on the panel. So after a few of the religionists said their piece, the atheist's turn came to speak. And he blasted. He said, you guys are just believing on faith, you know, things that you learn from some religion. We are basing our statements on science. And then he went on and made his, you know, statements about Earth. So when my turn came, I had brought up this point about the Big Bang. I said, do you believe in the Big Bang? He said, yes. I said, do you know anybody witnessed it? Is there any incontrovertible evidence that it actually happened? No. I mean, when they stop to think of it, they have to admit if they're honest. No. So then I said, and you're making statements based on faith as well. Based on faith. Sariputta Prabhu made a recording once. He said, the scientists believe in your theories just as much as any Baptist believes you'll be saved by Jesus. They believe. It's all based on faith. But they don't want to admit that publicly. And they're such rascals. They're not even gentlemen. That if I have a theory and you have a theory, neither one's been proved, at least both should be allowed to exist. And let's see, maybe, you know, you can put it to a vote or a test or whatever, but no. They have their theories, which they admit are theories, and they don't want any other theory to exist. You can't teach anything else in school, just our theories. So they're not even gentlemen. That was Prabhupada's point. At least let other theories flourish, let other theories be taught in the school, and then, you know, people can decide for themselves. But no, they're such rascals. We don't want any theory about creation. We only want this scientific so-called theory about, you know, Big Bang. So they're not even gentlemen. So I think we have maybe time for one more, and then we have to go. Here, this devotee here had his hand up for it. Hold on. Yeah. Wait for the mic.
Now, you're mentioning about the scientists changing their statements. More recently, you know, when I grew up as a child and all along up until all the school's kids, we were taught that Pluto was one of the planets. But very recently, they've changed that now.
Yeah.
And they've kicked it out. So you can imagine, you know, if they can detract from such a big statement, what about the rest?
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. They're looking out in the universe, and they make such definitive statements about, you know, this nebula and that thing, you know, there's like 2 million light years away, and they make all these definitive statements. And it's something that's right here in our own solar system, so close, just in the neighborhood, so to speak, Pluto. For so many years, they were saying Pluto was a planet, along with Uranus, Earth, you know, Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars, Jupiter, like that, out to Pluto. And they were saying it was a planet going around the sun, just like everything else in our neighborhood of the universe. And now they're saying, no, it's not a planet. So it's created a big furor in the public, because a lot of people grew up, you know, considering Pluto their favorite planet. You know? And now it's being kicked out. So this is the point, that they make such definitive statements, and then they go back on them. So that's for both.
I think you're making a very valid point on these issues, because a lot of things are coming to light, even just like in the idea of cigarette smoking. You know, there were so many scientists that were doing so much research on that, but never was it revealed to what the truth of the matter was. So obviously there's a lot of self-interest groups involved here. And then another aspect of it would be that, you know, just in the basis of even religion. And if you take a look at Forbidden Archaeology by Duda Karmadas, you know, there's so many things that he exposed in there that have been like either just left out, or they've been like smothered or put in a dark room so that nobody knows about it, in order to have a self-interest group come up with what the creation theory is and evolution. And so, you know, your point is well taken, that there's a lot of, you know, cheating going on. And the cheating is based on self-interest groups, money, fame, you know, distinction, adoration, profit. All these things are a big factor in what we read and what we understand. For instance, I was just recently heard that in these most recent history books, they like took out Thomas Jefferson now. And the reason they took him out is because he wasn't a real, you know, a real true Christian. He had other beliefs. So now the kids that are going to school now, they won't be able to hear so much about Thomas Jefferson. So this activity of cheating is going on constantly. So we shouldn't be so much taking everything that we read from these scientists as being the real actual fact, that there is a lot of cheating that goes on.
Yeah, it's called a knowledge filter. Now, we decide in advance what's correct, and anything that doesn't match our vision, we kick it out. So I know there's a lot more, it seems, but we have to stop. I just want to say a few words about what's on the calendar quickly. Today is Balaram Rasa Yatra, which means Balaram went back to Vrindavan and stayed there for the 2 months of Chaitra and Vishakha, and he engaged in Rasa Lila with the gopis there. It's understood that Balaram has his own gopis, and it's also Krishna Vasant Rasa, which is the springtime Rasa dance. There's also one that happens in the fall. And then we have the appearance of Bhaktivedanta Thakur, who was one of the esteemed servants of Vishnupriya Devi, Lord Chaitanya's widow, Sunyas widow, obviously. And also, he is accepted as being incarnation of Krishna's flute, Murali Vadana, Murali Manohar. And then we have Shyamananda Prabhu, very interesting story we could tell about Shyamananda, but time does not permit. But suffice it to say that he's accepted as one of the representatives or actually incarnations of Lord Chaitanya's mercy. That's why I brought the Adi Leela, I mean the Anti Leela. There's a very nice statement Prabhupada makes here that I just wanted to read quickly. The verse is Anti Leela chapter 5, text 88. Prabhupada, this verse says, "The activities of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are just like an ocean of nectar. Even a drop of this ocean can inundate all the three worlds." And the purport, very short but very, very sweet. Prabhupada says, "To inundate the three worlds with nectar is the purpose of the pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. How this could be possible was exhibited by Srila Raghunath Das Goswami and later by Thakur Narottam Das and Shyamananda Goswami, who all represented the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Now that same mercy is overflooding the entire world through the Krishna consciousness movement. The present Krishna consciousness movement is none different from the pastimes performed by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu when he was personally present, where the same principles are being followed and the same actions performed without fail." Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Rantarashima Bhagavatam ki jai.